right here on Sin every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. I'm Hannah Shouter.
And I'm Nick Angus, and we are getting you pumped up at the moment for our Sunday morning. If you've had a big night last night, well, don't fret, because we've put this song on and we're going to get pumped up for a good show today, good discussion, and a good topic, I think, as well. Hannah, what are we talking about today?
Absolutely. We're talking about the meaning of life. Now, don't come for us. Don't come for us. We had lots of ideas for today's show, but we figured let's go with something a little bit more niche, a little bit more deep.
Yeah.
Let's go for some real discussion. And yeah. I think that the meaning of life will be a really good one to talk about. So we've got some really cool options. We've got Secret Life of Walter Mitty. We've got The Good Place, which will be exciting to review because it is a new Netflix show.
Yes.
And what's the...
And then we're ending off with Samuel Beckett's Waiting for Godot, a very, very niche piece of theatre, but really, really interesting. It's going to be... Look, let me say, it's a very diverse and very interesting storyline, but as I said, I think what we're going to be exploring today is how life can be meaning in three different ways, three or more different ways. So we're going to look at those three different ways, and we're going to look at the depth behind the meaning and the meaning behind the meaning, if that makes sense.
Meaningception.
But for now, it's time for our review preview. And this week, Hannah went to see Bohemian Rhapsody.
I like that for once, I was the one that went to see the movie. I feel like now I don't have to beat you anymore. But yeah, I went to see Bohemian Rhapsody with my family, and I left the theater in tears.
Really?
It was a fantastic movie. Mm-hmm. If you have no idea what I'm talking about, I'm going to give a very, very quick summary. Bohemian Rhapsody is a foot-stomping celebration of Queen, their music, and their extraordinary lead singer, Freddie Mercury. Mm-hmm. So Queen was a 1780s rock band led by the ever amazing and eccentric Freddie Mercury. And this movie pretty much tells the story of the band's success, but more importantly, Freddie Mercury's personal life. Mm-hmm. And you find out, you know, you just get to learn so much about Freddie Mercury's personal life, how he came to be the person he is, how he you know, defied stereotypes and shattered conventions to become one of the most beloved entertainers on the planet. And it also...
And did this film entertain you?
Definitely. Definitely. I think the talent from the cast was completely through the roof. You almost forgot that you were watching people impersonating Queen, because it was that realistic in terms of the personas and the music and the singing. Mm-hmm. They did recycle a couple of Queen songs, as you do, you know, for the general soundtrack. But I think overall they still really delivered. And they covered lots of really important events during their career as well. I won't give too much away, but it was a fantastic movie. I'll also give massive, massive props to the aesthetic of the film. I thought, considering that the movie was set sort of in the 70s, 80s, it really did have that vibrance and that sort of pop culture sort of vibes happening all throughout the movie. You felt totally attracted to all the aesthetic of not just Freddie himself, but also the kind of music that they were performing and the style in which the way in which they created their music as well, which was a lot more unconventional and a lot of side characters that you don't know much about as well.
Do you think that was one of its major success points? And I think it is for these type of films that focus on not only a real life story, but the real life band in which you incorporate music. Do you think that because it had that really realistic aspect that made it really prominent and much more impactful for you?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. So I would highly recommend that everybody get into cinemas right now to go and see it. It's basically playing at, you know, all cinemas throughout Melbourne.
It is,
at the moment.
Yes.
I'm sure it'll be available on Netflix, you know, at some point. But go and see it in a theatre. I think there really was something special about hearing the intensity
experience
of the music. Yep. That's right. Yep. In a cinema surrounded by people. And it was a nice feeling sort of walking out of the cinema with people who were also in tears.
It is a really, yeah.
And, you know, there's a whole generation of parents and individuals who live to see Queen.
Yes.
And live to
and
see Freddie Mercury
perform. And who have grown up with Queen.
Perform.
And who have Queen in their childhood, in their, you know, adulthood. It's, you know, a band is something that you grow up with a lot of the time. So to kind of go see that and share it with people.
Absolutely.
Is
and
very
I think
nice.
Even for the new generation that didn't know Freddie Mercury, it's a really nice way to learn about who he was and his legacy and his talent.
Yes.
and sort of strive for what he represented, mm-hmm. which was, you know, just be yourself and be weird and don't care that much about that much. Pretty much. So we've got a great show for you today. We're going to go to a quick music break and we'll be right back. This is Sass.
And to go to this music break, we're going to be playing a song from Queen. It is Killer Queen. You're on Sass, the Screen, Air and Stage Show.
And welcome back to Sass with Hannah Schauder and Nick Angus every Sunday morning right here on Sin 90.7. We're talking about the meaning of life.
Yes.
For our screen segment, what have we got?
We have got The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. Now, this has been done before. It was previously made into a film and it has been, you know, discussed the idea before. It is quite a common... The ideas revolving around the film are quite common and it has been, you know, portrayed before in different mediums. However, today we're going to be looking at the 2016 remake or... 2013. My apologies. I got mixed up with another piece of entertainment looking at this afternoon, this morning. The 2013 remake with Ben Stiller. And this is a really beautiful film. You kind of go into it and you walk out almost saying, what was the point of that? But this is what we're really going to delve into today is what is the point of that and what is the point of the film within the film, but also outside of the film, and how has it had an impact on our life. For those of you out there who don't know what in God's name I'm talking about, I will let you know of a quick synopsis of what the secret life of Walter Mitty is about. So, Walter Mitty, an employee at Life magazine, spends day after monotonous day developing photos for the publication. To escape the tedium, Walter inhabits a world of exciting daydreams in which he is the undeniable hero. Walter fancies a fellow employee named Cheryl, and he would love to date her, but he feels unworthy. However, he gets a chance to have a real adventure when Life's new owners send him on a mission to obtain the perfect photo for the final print issue. So, look, first of all, there's quite a lot going on at the in that synopsis.
Yes.
But the main underlying plot line of this is Walter's adventure, an adventure into the unknown and to find this negative photo that's going to be on the Life. The cover of the Life magazine.
I feel like it does quite well in terms of exploring that sort of the mundane and almost meaningless existence of, you know, the idea of life and how, you know, sort of doing the same thing day in, day out.
Yeah.
You fantasize of a greater life out there for you, but the idea that you're never going to achieve such a thing.
Mm. And I think this film, it really revolves around the idea of the transformation of the meaningless into the magical and what life can be rather than what life is currently.
Because
as you're saying, Walter lives a very mundane life. He has a job. He doesn't have a life partner at this stage. You know, he lives normally. He, you know, sees his family regularly. So there's, you know, he lives a normal life like a lot of the people, but he wants something more in his life to make it that magical, that little bit more magical. And so this adventure and, you know, paralleled with his daydreams, this serve as this piece of magic for him to really, you know, just go off and have a time of his life. So I think what we're looking at here is the meaning of life to be an adventure? Is life an adventure? Is that the meaning of life? Is that what life is for us? To have an adventure and to just do, you know, everything that we can do.
I think an idea that really intrigues me with this movie is, are we always seeking meaning?
Mm.
That's a good point. It's that search for meaning. You know, you say that I want to get a good job and I want to have a great career, and then you have that career and you're thinking, oh, but now I need a nice house and I need a nice car.
Yes.
Another great movie that touches on this sort of thing is American Beauty, which is also a great movie, definitely worth, we'll cover that at some point, but also explores those ideas of, you know, you have a nice house and you have a good job, but life is boring and meaningless. And, you know, and I think what's cute about this movie is that, you know, Walter focuses on this one concept, you know, this negative. And the whole movie sort of focuses on him finding the meaning through this negative by trying to find it.
Mm.
And that sort of becomes almost his life's purpose for that duration of time.
Mm.
And I think it's no different to today where we focus on goals and we try and find our purpose.
Mm.
It's getting very deep.
But yeah, I think what you're raising is, you know, maybe are we, I think it's fantastic to really, you know, set these amazing goals and have these amazing visions of, you know, what you can do in your life. But as you're saying, you know, maybe is there a point in which we look, not look too far, because I think setting, you know, setting the bar high is absolutely what everyone wants to do. But as you say, you know, what's so wrong with living, you know, just a normal mundane life? There's nothing wrong with that.
So yeah, that's maybe, right. And why are we striving for happiness when we can't be happy now?
Exactly.
That sort of idea.
Yeah.
So it definitely touches on those very dark themes. Same with love as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, like his unrequited love on his for his co-worker. Mm. And that same idea where it's, why are we waiting for, you know, the love of our life to come around when we can't love the people that are here right now?
Yes.
Also that kind of idea of meaning, that the meaning of life is to find someone to connect to.
Yes.
And share your life with.
And I think it's very evident in this film is that at the start you see Walter and his family relations. They're great. There's nothing bad about them, but you can see that there's this kind of distance between him and them. And I think what he learns over the course of the film is that, you know, these family relationships, they're there for a reason. And, you know, let's not just put them aside. Let's cherish them and let's absorb them.
Absolutely.
So I think in a way, even though Walter goes on this adventure he's been waiting for, it's not only an adventure for him to kind of enter his magical space, but also to learn that what you have currently in your life is totally fine.
Yeah.
And totally worth, you know, sharing and absorbing to the extreme.
Absolutely. Very well said. So in terms of critical response, I was a little bit disheartened to learn about sort of the poor reviews for this movie. On the positive note, in 2016, Rolling Stone magazine asked readers to choose their top 10 Ben Stiller movies, as you do.
As you do.
The Secret Life of Walter Mitty came in at number 3. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if Night at the Museum was his number 1.
Yeah,
that was a great movie.
Yeah,
it received really mixed views. It got 51% on Rotten Tomatoes, and the site's consensus reads that it doesn't lack for ambition, but The Secret Life of Walter Mitty fails to back up its grand designs with enough substance to anchor the spectacle.
So it's interesting because you think of that and you say, okay, yeah, like you look at the film, and as I said, I walked out of it and I'm like, what was the point of that? So I think that's really interesting because they say there's a lack of substance, but I think that's the whole point of this film, is that it's to show that there doesn't need to be substance, not only in film, but in real life. You can have just moments of, you know, mundaneness that you get. That's fine. And that's a reality almost. You know, I think a lot of films these days is they stuff in so much. It's like, that's not realistic.
So you think it was artistically deliberate to not have a take-home message?
I think it was artistically deliberate to just have almost make it quite a slow film in certain aspects, because that's the reality of Walter Mitty's life.
Right.
I think, you know, in even some ways, it may have even been over-exaggerated. So I think walking out of that, I think there's definitely a lot of questions you walk out with upon viewing this film, but I think the substance in the actual what happens during the film, that might have been a bit lackluster, but I think that's, you know, that parallels to his life, which is important in, you know, obtaining the realism.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and coming back to a more positive review, Peter Travers of the Rolling Stone magazine actually gave the film a positive review, saying that in his uniquely funny and unexpectedly tender movie, Stiller takes us on a personal journey of lingering resonance. And I really like that idea where this movie and these themes and ideas of where on earth do we find the meaning and why are we really living in the mundane? Do we need to pursue something more fantastical? But it's that idea of it's different for everyone.
It's different for everyone.
And absolutely. Everybody has a different sense of meaning and a different sense of purpose. And I think the movie does a great job of that. So if you would like to check out that movie, it's available pretty much on Netflix, Stan, any of those online platforms. Give it a watch. It's definitely a movie worth having a discussion with your family, co-workers, spouse about.
Yeah.
Just those different ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. And it raises a lot of questions about, you know, what is life? What is the meaning of life? And in this case, is it an adventure?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So there we go.
You feeling freaked out? You can let us know.
You can let us know via our Twitter page, SASS_show, our Instagram, SASS_show, or our Facebook page, SASS. Oh, there you go.
So you are welcome to text in, message in during this music break, and we'll be able to get back to you in the next segment.
You are on SASS Screen Air and Stage Show with Nick Angus and Hannah Shouter. This is Go Your Own Way by Fleetwood Mac. And that was Go Your Own Way by Fleetwood Mac. You're on SASS, the Screen, Air and Stage Show with Hannah Shouter and Nick Angus. Happy Sunday morning, everyone out there. Hoping you have a very happy Sunday morning, you know, end of the weekend, but that's okay because we've got plenty more entertainment to talk about today. Our theme for today is the meaning of life, and now we're going to progress to our air stage. We have just looked at our screen stage, and that was The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. However, now it's time to go to Netflix, The Good Place. So for those of you out there who have no idea what I'm talking about, once again, I'll give you a quick synopsis, then we're going to take a quick music break and delve into the ideas, the questions, the thoughts in relation to this TV series. So this is the synopsis for The Good Place. When Eleanor Shellstrop finds herself in the afterlife, she's both relieved and surprised that she's made it into The Good Place. But it doesn't take long for Eleanor to realise she's there by mistake. She hides in plain sight from The Good Place's architect Michael and his all-knowing assistant Janet. Her seemingly perfect neighbours and open-hearted soulmate help her realise that it's never too late. With the help of her new friends and a few enemies, Eleanor becomes determined to shed her old way of life in hopes of discovering a new one in the afterlife. Now, that is the synopsis for A Good Place. We're going to take a quick music break now. However, we'll be back to talk about some ideas in relation to this TV series. And just a reminder out there, if you have any questions, thoughts, opinions about this TV series or about what we've already talked about, A Secret Life of Walter Mitty, please send through them to us for our Twitter, SAS_show, our Instagram, SAS_show as well as our Facebook page. We love a comment here and there, even post on our page. Feel free to do whatever because we would love to hear from you. And we're all about audience interaction, so please send that through. However, for now, we're going to take a quick music and ad break, and we will be back very soon. You're on SAS, the Screen Air and Stage Show with Nick Angus and Hannah Schauder. And that was Dope on a Rope by The Growlers. You're on SAS, the Screen Air and Stage Show with Nick Angus and Hannah Schauder. And today we... Sorry about that. Today we are talking about the meaning of life. So, for our TV...
All right, let's backtrack. So we're talking about this meaning of life.
Yes.
And we are in the middle of our air segment, which is The Good Place. So if you were here before the ad break, Nick gave a really quick synopsis about the show, and now we're going to dig into it a little bit. Now, I've had so many good reviews from people that have been watching this show about how great it is. It's comical. It explores really cool ideas. And it's an overall great plot.
It's had some really good reviews, not only in our public sphere, but online. It's been nominated for Primetime Emmy Awards. It's done really, really well. It's been around since 2016, but it's really hyped up its prominence and popularity kind of at the time now, really.
Absolutely. So the second and third seasons have been given a 100% rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Get better than that.
You really cannot get better than that. It's like, I'm so... Like, it's almost, like, shocking that a TV show could have such a good one. There's, so James, I'm not going to, Poynawazic, thank you, James.
Poynawazic. Thank you, James.
Times explained that the refreshing thing about The Good Place in an era of artistic bleakness is its optimism about human nature.
Mm-hmm.
It's made humane and side-splittingly entertaining television out of the notion that people, and even the occasional immortal demon, are redeemable. And I thought that was a really nice sort of way to lead us into our discussion about the themes that this show explores.
Yes.
Something that got me really excited about covering this show is the philosophical topics it touches on. Now, I'm a sucker as a philosophy student. I got to learn a whole lot of this fun stuff in uni. And it's really cool to see how they touch on these different ideas. I'll just give a couple of examples. So there's the idea of utilitarianism. And this idea is the concept that the best consequences are brought about by maximizing utility or someone's satisfaction. So they cover this idea by covering Philip Foot's trolley problem, in which a runaway tram is heading towards a group of workers on the track who will be killed unless you change the switch to send it on a sidetrack, and it will kill only one person. So it kind of touches on those ideas of, would you rather maximize the utility of, you know, five road workers or the one person who will be killed because of what you did. So very deep sort of morality questions like that. It also touches on existentialism.
And I think that's going to relate to our topic really finitely today, is the meaning of life, you know?
Definitely.
It's about Eleanor's choice. Well, not choice, but she ends up in The Good Place. And so, but she didn't have a choice. So, you know, what is the afterlife? And does our life today determine what's going to happen in our life, afterlife? What is the afterlife? So many questions can be raised. In this case, though, it's about, you know, what do you need? I think one of the main points of today is, what do you need to do in life today in order to end up in, let's say, the metaphorical good place that Eleanor finds herself in? So,
very interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but I sort of get the vibes of sort of secularizing a very religious concept.
Yes, yes.
Of almost putting a really basic formula into this idea of the afterlife, where do we go, doing good deeds, and basically saying, oh, well, there's the good place and then there's the bad place, and that's where you go.
It's very black and white, you know, very like concrete.
Very
like,
straightforward. There's this,
but is it that straightforward? Or also, I think this TV series raises the ideas of, is it that straightforward in that there's the good place, there's the bad place, or is there something more? And maybe there is a choice.
Maybe. There
is. So it really raises a lot of questions about, you know, not only existentialism, but, you know, about what is the afterlife and how can we determine where we end up in that, and what do we need to do today?
That's right. And Nick, I think we were discussing before how it sort of plays on those Christian ideals in the sense that, you know, sort of having a good life so that you can live happily in the afterlife.
Yes.
In the next realm. So I think that's also really interesting where it's focused around Eleanor's conflict of, she doesn't deserve to be in the good place because she wasn't a good person.
Yeah.
So does that debunk the whole theory of, well, we've just got to do good deeds and we'll be totally fine?
Yes.
So lots of questions.
Another question while we're at it, before we get to, you know, other discussion in relation to the TV series, while we're on this discussion at the moment, another question is life about finding your perfect identity? Because when Eleanor gets into the good place, she realizes that she doesn't really belong there. And so, relating to, you know, life in its essence at the moment, is life about finding your perfect identity, or is it always a bit of a, you know, a constant journey in that case? Do you ever find your perfect identity?
Oh, that's really cool. And that also links to philosophy as well. Mm. How do we define identity? Mm. You know, is it by having the same body? Is it having our memories? Is it having a soul?
Mm-hmm.
Is it just, you know, just having the same consciousness into the next world, which I think is also really interesting.
Yeah.
Almost seeing the difference between Eleanor in the real world and Eleanor in the good place.
Yeah.
Because she's still, in a sense, the same person.
Mm-hmm.
But is that her true self?
Is that her true self? And, well, there's so many, like what we're talking about, we're asking so many questions that do exist in this storyline. And what I find is really effective about this TV series is it answers all these questions or addresses all these questions in a really quirky, fun, eccentric, comedic picture. You know, this is not a serious TV series. Don't go into this expecting, you know, to take your note and write down, you know, little points here and there, because it's not that. It's just, you know, feel good. But it still managed to address this, and I think it's really, really good like that.
Absolutely. The Guardian actually wrote an article about it earlier this year called How a Sitcom Made Philosophy Seem Cool.
Yeah.
And I think that really does speak volumes about what this show is striving to evoke in their audiences, which is, this is a really relaxed comedic show.
Yes, yeah.
That is probably quite easy to digest, mm-hmm. but it still leaves you with these questions and touching on these themes, I think, without pushing it too hard.
Too hard, yeah.
And I think that's why it's doing so well.
Mm.
And it sounds like they've got a really good formula. Nick, you did mention before about how they've put a big name in there.
Yeah.
They've got Kristen Bell.
Yeah.
How do you
think that is the main attraction of the popularity?
I actually don't think so.
Don't think so? You think it's the quirkiness?
I think normally we're a little bit liger. You know, they probably come for the actor.
Mm.
I think they probably did come for her, but they stayed for... They stayed
like
for
that.
The exploration.
Yeah, I like that.
You know, it's
like
come for the act to stay for the theme.
Yeah.
And people started watching and they thought, oh, wow, like, okay, she's great, but the idea is actually really cool.
Yeah. And it's done in a really, you know, stylized but effective way that's going to, keep bringing audience members back.
Absolutely. I mean, do you think there could be downsides to exploring so many themes in one show?
Well, I think that's the beauty of TV, is that it can. You know, it's TV is... in essence, the longest, you know, running entertainment in some ways, because it, you know, lasts over seasons, over episodes. It's not just a film that is over in, you know, 2 hours. Even if there's a trilogy, it's over in about 6 to 7 hours. Whereas a TV series can last, you know, as long as it wants. So I think it can do that. I think as long as it doesn't, because what can tend to happen is someone gets a really great idea for a TV series and then they just rush through it and then they get to the end and they're like, why didn't we spread this out? So I think that this TV series does it well, but it's just, if it can just keep up that kind of...
Yeah, I think...
It'd be nice.
I think the one thing that this TV show will need to avoid if it continues is not to stretch it out too long.
Yep.
And I think that will be a trap that they might fall into if their popularity continues to grow, because once you've really explored all those themes and the problems and the good place, there's not much more left, and you sort of need a nice way to wrap it up.
And there's nothing bad with wrapping up a TV series. I think that's what people forget these days. They're like, no, because people love it. Yeah, they don't love it. But if you leave something while it's good, don't leave on a bad note, because that's just, it's not a nice way to end. And I think, as I said, it's okay to wrap up a TV series, because then you can really look at that work and say, that was amazing.
Well, look, so far it's had 3 great successful seasons. I'm sure there'll be a 4th one coming out. We'll have to see how it goes. I think so far the popularity of the show is really making it stand out and ensuring its continuity.
Yes.
But like you said, it will be a matter of if they can have more meaning in the TV show's life.
A question to leave you on. We're going to take a quick song break now, but we'll be back. You're on Sassa Screen, Erin's stage show with Hannah Shout and Nick Angus. This song, one of my favourites, it is Living the Vida Loca by Ricky Martin.
Oh, love me some Ricky Martin. And welcome back to Sass, the Screen Erin stage show, right here with Hannah Shadow and Nick Angus every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. Now, before we get into our stage segment, I actually want to make a really quick, exciting announcement that Nick and I are actually going to be on Sin's TV show 1700 this Thursday evening, which is really exciting. We're going to be talking about the show and what we've been covering for the past couple of seasons, and it's a great way for viewers to sort of put faces to the voices. And also learn a little bit more about why we decided to pursue this show, why we like it so much, why we want to keep doing it.
Yeah.
So that's going to be on from 5 to 6 this Thursday evening.
It is.
Tune in. I believe it's on Channel 31.
Yes.
It's 1700. And it's going to be really exciting.
I know. I'm really excited for that. You know, we're going on air. We've talked about our air, but now it's time for us to go on air.
We could so do a show where, for the air segment, we review our interview. That would be great, hey?
Reality part two.
I was like, we're on a real show.
We have it,
and now we're on it.
This is going to blow people's minds.
Seriously. So now we've got some meaning to the show.
Oh!
So going back to our meaning of life, we have spoken about Walter Mitty, the movie, and The Good Place, the TV show. There have been some amazing themes covered so far, almost too deep, I think, for a one-hour show. But for now, we're going to finish off with our stage segment with the play Waiting for Godot.
And in French, in French, it's En attendant Godot.
Because it was originally
a French play, and it's been obviously transcribed into English, and it's by Samuel Beckett. Hannah, why don't you give us a quick synopsis, and I'd love to see how we feel about it.
Well, this is really interesting, because I don't know if many people know this play.
No.
So, Waiting for Godot is a play by Samuel Beckett, like you said, in which two characters, Vladimir and Estragon, wait for the arrival of someone named Godot who never arrives. And while waiting, they engage in a variety of discussions while encountering 3 other characters.
So, what do you think, Hannah, when you listen to that synopsis? What is a sentence or phrase that comes into your head?
I think the actual word Godot is really interesting, because Godot, I think, is an interesting name, and so we can dig a little bit deeper into that. So Dictionary.com actually has an explanation for this term. Mm. So the idea of waiting for Godot is to describe a situation where you are waiting for something to happen,
yeah.
but it will probably never happen.
Yeah.
And I really like that. First of all, I really like that meaning. I love some, you know, some nice vocabulary meaning.
Yeah.
And that's already enough to sort of give you an idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this whole idea of like waiting, mm. what are we waiting for? Is it actually explained in the musical why they're waiting for this person?
So it's a play. It doesn't actually involve music in it.
Right.
And I'll actually give it a bit of context. This was released, so this play was first released after the Second World War. And from the following the tragedy and all the horrific events that happened during the Second World War, people were left pretty much questioning what is the point of life. Why, like, there's people fighting around us, there's people dying, there's death, there's horrific things happening. What is the point of life, you know, when all this is happening around us? So this play was pretty much created and performed to parallel the sentiments of not only the French population, but all the populations that were involved in the Second World War.
Right. Very interesting.
And it was interesting because, like, you would think that this would have a negative impact on the population in that, you know, they didn't want to go to the theatre and see something that was quite, because it's very quite, you know, dark and depressing. It doesn't have any light themes in it. But in essence, it actually really helped people to realise and that maybe, you know, life, there is no specific meaning and maybe that's okay. Again, you know, relating back to A Secret Life of Walter Mitty, maybe that's okay if, you know, there is no specific meaning to life. At the time, though, during the world after the Second World War, a lot of people did prefer to go to see the more eccentric and upbeat, you know, musicals and plays because they wanted to feel good. They wanted to have a break from, you know, the events that were surrounding them. And so that's why they escaped to the theatre to see, you know, plays that were a little bit more lively. But I think coming back to your question of, you know, what does this play inherently, you know, portray? I think it portrays just a story, obviously, about these two men who not only, you know, they question what the meaning of life is, but it relates to people about what the meaning of life is. And that maybe, you know, it makes people leave the theatre going, you know, maybe there is no inherent meaning.
Mm, it's very interesting. I think they touch on two primary topics, the idea of, you know, existentialism,
mm-hmm, yeah.
Which we did touch on with Walter Mitty and also with The Good Place, really, that idea of, is there meaning? What's the meaning of human existence, the place of God in that existence, and those theories of existentialism as well. You know, if, you know, the conscious reality is very complex and without an objective or universally known value, and that the individual, you know, must create value by affirming it and living it, not by simply talking about it or philosophizing.
We love it. It's a new word. Add it to the dictionary of the South.
Add it to the dictionary. But the idea is that when we talk about existentialism, is it enough just to talk about it?
Yeah.
And
or should we actually perform it in this stage?
Well, not just perform it, but should we just live it?
Should we live
it? And to say that, well, this is the meaning of my life. Well, it's all very well and good to say that chocolate is the meaning of my life. But if I'm not going out and not eating chocolate, well, then am I really exercising the meaning of my life? But, like, those sorts of ideas. Mm. And, you know, same with ethics as well.
Mm.
And I believe a boy is beaten in this play and no one takes any, you know, no one notices. And that's quite ironic because, you know, the sort of talking about, you know, finding meaning and yet basic things like good deeds are sort of overlooked.
Yeah.
Which I think is kind of, you know, kind of nice and symbolic in that sense, and a bit of the hypocrisy of talking like this. It's a very practice what you preach, and you can talk and talk about all these philosophical ideas and ethics and morality, but if you're not exercising your morality, then what's the point of talking about it?
Mm. That's a really, really interesting points raised there, Hannah. Really, really interesting. I really like them, and I think one thing I would like to ask you is if, obviously, this play is not out at the moment, so I have not seen it done, but I've studied a lot about it. If you were to go see this play, what would be your initial reactions, do you think? Because it is, I feel like a lot of these days, the theatre is trying to, as it always has done, but really specifically these days, it's really trying to impact on its audience and make audiences leave with an idea, a question, a message. How do you think you would go about saying this? Do you think you would leave and be like, no, I didn't get it, I don't agree with it, and you would just go out with a blank mind? Or do you think you would be like, wow, that was really random, but I've got this question in my head? Because I think that the risk of this play is it can have both effects, because it draws that fine
line
of not really having any storyline, but it can really have greater meaning, or can flop. So what are your thoughts, obviously?
Yes, you sort of underpinned my answer right there, which is I think I would still walk away with those questions and sort of interest in the themes that were covered. But I think I would also be focused on how they conveyed those ideas.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's all very well and good to say that you're a play that focuses on these big existential questions.
Mm.
But if your play is just two guys sitting there and talking about it,
it can be.
Is that really enough?
And I think these days we're used to, you know, big, lively productions. Not always lively, but, you know, just things happening.
No, and it comes back to The Good Place as well, where it's doing so well because it touched on those themes, and but in a really entertaining, relaxed way.
Yeah.
And maybe we're no longer the kind of audience that can handle more dull, slow-moving sorts of plays.
Mm.
We need the meaning crammed into something else.
Yeah.
And, you know, in all honesty, the synopsis doesn't sound very exciting.
No.
It's like these two guys are waiting for a man that's never going to come.
Mm.
Well, what really is there?
Mm.
What are they really doing? But it would definitely be interesting for listeners at home to, you know, go a little bit further than we have. It's a bit more difficult in a 1-hour format to really delve into this.
Yes.
But I will just end off with a very quick little quote from Martin Esslin in his book, The Theatre of the Absurd.
I actually have that book. Yeah. I haven't actually read it yet, but no, it looks fantastic book.
So he sort of like touches on this play a little bit, and what he concludes is that humanity is doomed to be faced with the absurd, or the absolute absurdity of the existence in lack of intrinsic purpose. And I found that to be a really interesting take on this play, because on the one hand, it's quite dull.
Mm.
But on the other hand, maybe the fact that this guy isn't coming is absurd, and that we need to find more excitement, very much like Walter Mitty.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to create meaning for ourselves, you know, and not expected to just come out of the blue.
Yeah.
Like, we can't just expect meaning to walk into our lives.
Maybe
we've got to create meaning.
There you go. Thank you for that, Hannah. That was really good discussion. I think we've given you some ideas and questions to go home, you know, to talk to your family about. Look at this play. Read it. It's a short play. It's not long at all, because obviously there's not much to be in it, but it really raises some interesting points.
And I think on that note as well, before we go to a quick music break, it's really nice to cover themes like this in our show that are a little bit more complex and a little bit more philosophical to see. I mean, this is the entertainment industry, and it's doing so much more than just showing you some colours and some dialogue. This is proper thinking
ideas. Yeah, and thought behind it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it really does leave you questioning your existence.
Mm.
In a good way.
In a good way. Yeah, in a good way.
In a good way. But with that, we're going to leave you in a good way to a good song.
This is Green and Gold by Leanne LaHavas. I discovered her 2 years ago and love her still to this day. You are on SAS, the Screen, Air and Stage Show with Hannah Schauder and Nick Angus. We'll be back very soon.
And welcome back to SAS, the Screen, Air and Stage Show with Hannah Schauder and Nick Angus. Hope you're having a lovely Sunday. We have just finished reviewing our entertainment pieces for this week with the theme, The Meaning of Life. Now, right before we finish the show, we're going to do something very quickly, and then we'll come back and do our preview. So, Nick, take it away.
So, as some of you may already know, it is Armistice Day today, the 11th of the 11th. So, in order to respect the day and what it stands for and our fallen soldiers, we're going to take a minute silence and then come back with our preview for next week. So, a minute silence starting from now. And that was our minute silence for Armistice Day today, the 11th of November. Now it is time to end off the show, Hannah, with our preview for the week. And what are we
previewing? We are previewing Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald. This is the this is interesting because this is the sequel to Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. It's still the prequel to the Harry Potter franchise.
Confused?
Yes. Confused much? Yes. So, Nick, you're going to see this movie.
This week, actually.
This week. Yeah. So I think we will review it next episode.
Yes.
To find out. It's, look, I think it's going to be really interesting. Yeah. I hope it does as well as the first movie. I mean, look, there's plenty of Harry Potter fans. J.K. Rowling is churning these books out.
And the dollar's in.
The dollar is running. Well, I mean, that would be great to talk about at some point when we review it, if the money was actually worth investing into a sequel. And, you know, or are we, you know, are we just continuing to plug the Harry Potter series that is really long gone?
Yeah.
But with that, we're going to wrap up the show right there. Thank you all very much for listening. If you're tuning into the show now and you're like, why did I not go on to Sin before? That's fine. Okay, we're disappointed, but it's fine. You can listen to all of our episodes, including today's, on omnistudio.com/sass. You can find all of our episodes there from our past two seasons, as well as a whole lot of other shows as well. Mm-hmm. While you're on the internet, you can also check us out on Facebook, where we post the links to our podcast, as well as our music list. That's right. Not many other shows do this. We actually post the music that we play for your listening pleasure. And also just to acknowledge the amazing artists that
we are covering.
That's right, that we get to play every week. And I guess seeing as you're on social media anyway, may as well check out Twitter and Instagram.
Yes, please do.
Which we're starting up at the moment as well. Send us in messages, bombard us with what you would, what themes you'd like to hear us cover next. We are transitioning more from genres into themes for the rest of season
which
2,
awesome.
Which is really cool. So please send us any movies, TV shows or musicals you'd like us to discuss.
And just as a reminder, we are on channel 31 this Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m. for 1700, the show. So we're really, really excited. We're going to be on there talking about our show, you know, what it means to have a show. We're really, really excited. And yeah, it should be great. It should be really good.
Really exciting.
Yeah.
So thank you very much for tuning in and have a wonderful day.
I'm thinking, Hannah, I think you, no, you have a go. I've been doing it all the time, and I'm like, why am I always doing it? Go.
Oh, okay, we'll have to a talk after this. All right, keep up with your screen, Erin Stage. In other words,
stay sassy. We'll see you guys next week.
Have a wonderful Sunday, and we'll see you all next time on the Screen, Erin Stage Show with Hannah Shatter.